right. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us again today on Unprintable. Today's episode features a little segment with Nicole and Valerie. That's Nicole Franz and Valerie Katzenstein today talking about the last Game of Thrones episode. Nicole, I bet you're really happy to talk about that, aren't you?
I am, and we're going to have some spoilers, but we're going to predate it, or okay. With that, some like spoilers. So if you guys aren't caught up, you guys can kind of skip ahead. We'll have the timestamps.
I'll put a timestamp in there so you can pay attention to that. Yeah. We've also got an interview with Jamie Kunzer. She interviews Petar Kacenovich of Classical Blast. Now, Classical Blast melds classical music with contemporary rock music. Very cool sounding. We'll have a little bit of a preview from them after the interview. You can hear a single from them. And they are playing on April 29th at the Woodstock Opera House. They'll be playing alongside Kashmir, the Led Zeppelin tribute band. So if you don't have tickets for that, find them and listen to Classical Blast. Enjoy that show. But we'll have that interview coming up later on in the podcast. Today also, I'd like to take some time to talk about an unfortunate, untimely passing of one of rock's amazing pop icons that just passed away. I'm talking about Prince, of course. Mm-hmm. Very sad, very unexpected. There's been a lot of loss in the music and the actors of this year. We've had a lot of people dying,
two music icons that are just – there's been a lot of loss this year, but particularly like just – innovators,
yeah,
one-of-a-kind performers who just really broke barriers between David Bowie and now Prince.
Yeah, and it's very tragic, and the last person in my mind I would have thought we'd lose this year was Prince, so I'll say a few words later on about Prince and that sad, unfortunate event. But first and foremost, Nicole and I would like to get into some more movies. We talked movies last time, Nicole.
We did.
We talked superhero movies.
We did.
This time, I want to talk just some of these summer blockbuster reboot movies that we've got going on. I guess you can call some of them reboot movies, right? One of them in particular.
Sequels,
yeah,
some of them.
We'll go sequels.
Reboot sequels in
some
case.
There you go. In some case, it is reboot sequels. So we've got Independence Day right off the bat, and Nicole and I just watched the trailers again, so they're fresh in our minds, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of things that we can talk about. So, Nicole, what are you hyped for with Independence Day resurgence?
Well, first of all, I'm super excited to see so many of the actors that made the first Independence Day movie from 1996. So much fun. I was 10 when that came out, and I loved it. Bill Pullman rocking that presidential speech. I used to have it memorized. My cousin did it for like a speech thing at one point. Like he
nice.
Did it like for like a speech oratory competition of some kind. It's like, you know, it's just kind of an iconic moment there. And you've got him back. We've got Vivica A. Fox is back. Brent Spiner's back. Jeff Goldblum's back.
Yeah.
Judd Hirsch is back. And we're getting some new actors in here, too, like Liam Hemsworth, who seems to play a pretty big role in that. And we're also getting an actor coming in as the Will Smith son character, mm-hmm. since Will Smith is not back.
Yes. He's assumed dead in this this particular future of
It has been
America.
20 years.
Yes, yes. So I don't know how old he was supposed to be when the original one kicked off. He couldn't have been that old. Probably in his 30s.
I don't even know if he was that old. He could have been in his late 20s.
Yeah. So maybe an unfortunate event happened that rallied his son to join the service as well. We'll see all about that. But yeah, I'm very excited to see some of these characters come back. And the first trailer we watched, when I watched it the first mm-hmm. time, I didn't get that excited about it. I was like, they're going to blow this out of proportion. It's going to be way too big. It's going to be way too over the top. And it's not going to have that, I don't know, I guess the first one was really way over the top. But it had
some emotional moments.
It had very emotional
as well.
Moments, yeah. And the scene with, it stands out in my mind today. The scene at the end with Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum in the cockpit smoking cigars as they're uploading a virus to the alien ship stands out in my mind as one of the most badass moments in movie history for me. I was like, oh my God, these guys are so cool. Look at what they're doing.
And it looks like we're getting Chris Hemsworth and Jeff Goldblum doing that kind of thing in this one. And it looks like the first one was really big, and this one is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, the effects in those trailers, over the top. Just you don't just have this beam coming down and destroying the city anymore.
Or the White House.
Or the White House. You have the entire city being lifted off the ground, moved, and then dropped back down somewhere. It looks intense.
Yeah.
Really well done, by the way. The CG is really well done. The little just the tiny little nuances in all of this stuff. I noticed, I think it was the Empire State Building that's lifted up at one point. You can see little electrical flashes in the windows as it's being dropped. Like, how? Oh. How ingenious. Like, all the little detail in the – it's absolutely amazing.
Well, I think at one point they are in London because you can see the London Bridge get
and
picked
Big
up.
Ben, yeah.
You know, where we got Big Ben. And it's like, you know, Jeff Goldblum's got his great – you know, they like to take out the landmines.
Yeah, the landmarks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They like to hit the man. You know, come on. It's like they're like going for that destroying your morale. And kind of like the idea is that these aliens, you know, some of them survived and are kind of like hanging out maybe it looks like in the Australian outback kind of thing in like this weird like kind of exile colony.
Right.
And then they sent out a distress call. And some of them are imprisoned, it looks like. It looks in some type of facility.
Yeah, some of them look like they're in some kind of research facility, and that's the scene when he's like, they're not screaming, they're celebrating, and you're like, oh no.
Yeah, Brent Spiner, more bad news.
What's gonna happen?
He's so delighted about this, like, terrible news in the last film, and now it's like,
He's very tinfoil hat, in a lot of ways as that character, so
you don't have Randy Quaid anymore.
Right. Somebody's got to be the conspiracy person. Yeah. Well, Randy Quaid, of course, sacrificing himself for the greater good to figure out, oh, that's how you take down the motherships. You just throw a projectile into that big opening that shoots their
and
laser.
Shout up yours really loudly.
Yep. That's if you don't have the up yours, though, no go. Does not blow up the ship.
Yeah.
Doesn't work.
I do think it's going to be really interesting to kind of see. I think the trailer's hitting some emotional moments. You've got the president's Bill Pullman, President Whitmore's daughter, coming in, and she looks like she's got a role as a fighter pilot and has a close relationship with the new character played by Liam Hemsworth. And of course, you've got the
Will Smith's son.
Yeah, Will Smith's son. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
But not I think it's going to be an interesting son, one, and that's coming up June 24th. But let's get into the next one, which is kind of a reboot here.
Yes. Yes, it is kind of a reboot, and I don't know if they're going to make mention to the original one. And we are talking about Ghostbusters here. Mm-hmm. That is the big one that I'm really excited about and Nicole's excited about. I was not so excited about Independence Day. Nicole is very excited about Independence Day. But we can come to a general consensus that Ghostbusters is going to do it for us. We need to be there and see it.
It looks hilarious from the trailers. And it looks like just a lot of fun.
It
does. A really fun summer blockbuster with like some great women with some great comedy gems. And then Chris Hemsworth for the eye candy for us ladies.
Seriously, the Hemsworth family dominating the movie, the summer blockbusters this year.
We just needed to get the oldest Hemsworth brother doing something, and then we can just have the trifecta.
There you go.
It's going to be really interesting because, you know, this is kind of the gender-flipped Ghostbusters, which a lot of people were – I shouldn't say a lot of people. A lot of people were not excited about this in a lot of different ways, and then there's been some – backlash against some people who are maybe a little less excited about women doing things in general that are, their thing.
Well, we've talked about that in previous podcasts and how, you know, there's this stigma on the gender roles in society, and it's really unfortunate that there are those stigmas. But I think this looks fantastic.
Yeah. Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig.
And I'm glad that Melissa McCarthy's character is it seems like she is the less physical one of the group. A lot of the comedy, she's being put in these roles that are way physical. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't introduced to her as a physical comedian.
Yeah.
I was introduced to her as Suki from Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
And she was not in any way, shape, or form a physical comedian. I guess there are some episodes where she's like slipping and falling in the kitchen, but it doesn't define her character.
Yeah.
Her character just kind of a flighty mess sometimes. Mm-hmm. But then on Mike and Molly, she was really grounded. And then because she was being typecast in these roles, it's like they made her more physical on that show. And I hated that idea. Like, why just let her do her thing? Maybe that's what she wanted to do. I don't know. But I'm glad to see her moving out of the physical comedy realm. And seems like more of the other, like Leslie Jones is that.
Yeah. Leslie Jones is playing
That's her name.
More the brashy former subway man. She's the native New Yorker who's got kind of the inside knowledge there. Right. And actually, I read that originally that role was written for Melissa McCarthy. And they kind of flipped it up and did some rewrites and figured out how to make that work for Leslie Jones' talents.
Yeah, I think she works really well as that character. And I see her – she fits that role perfectly.
Yeah.
Because I love her brand of humor on SNL. Mm-hmm. And I think that brand of humor makes that role work so, so well.
Yeah. I think that over-the-top thing – and I think it's going to be interesting kind of seeing with Kristen Wiig is kind of playing a pretty – straight-laced character, and then you've got Katie McKinnon doing like a really intense, little quirky character who's kind of an interesting character who's kind of a little flirty in the trailer there.
It's very interesting to me because she looks like she's taken on the personification of cartoon Egon. She's got the hair.
Yeah.
She's got the goggles. You know, she's doing all this really weird stuff, but she doesn't seem like she has that straight-laced characteristics that that Egon had.
Yeah.
And
maybe it's a little bit of an homage.
Right. No, I'm glad that it's an homage. I'm glad they're not trying to remake these characters. I'm glad they're not remaking Winston. I'm glad they're not remaking Ray or Peter or Egon. Like, I'm glad they have their own personalities and they're just kind of, like you said, paying homage to these previous characters.
I also think it's interesting Chris Hemsworth's kind of like in there as their like beefy receptionist with his glasses, and he's like all adorable. But then it's like you'd heard that they kind of rewrote that role a little bit more once Chris Hemsworth got cast, so he would be a little bit more action oriented. And you see that in some of the trailers with the whole thing where ghosts can possess people now. Yeah. The spirit. So you had that great bit with Melissa McCarthy and Leslie Jones, where she's like, the power of pain compels you.
She slaps the ghost out of her, but then she hits her again. Yeah. That's really good. That was really good.
It's a great physical bit. And you know, it seems like maybe Chris Hemsworth's getting a little possessed in there.
Yeah. Looks like he might get a little frisky with somebody.
We'll see. He's a little interesting. It's interesting to see him kind of in a female-dominated kind of movie to see how kind of that switches it around.
Right, because you had Annie Potts in the original ones taking on the role of Janine.
Yep.
And you kind of have that reversed in this one. He also seems like he takes on not only the role of receptionist, but also the role of Lewis Tully from the original movies, where he's kind of like, this little nerdy guy a little bit, and where he's wearing his sweater vests.
Yep.
But then he suits up.
Yeah.
Like, you see that in the trailer. He suits up and tries to go and make it happen.
Yeah, so he's on a motorcycle. We'll see how that works out for him.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for this movie. It just looks like a lot of fun. A lot of like it just looks like it's going to be a great movie to get in, you know, out of the heat into an air-conditioned room for like 2 hours of escapism. And Paul Feig, I'm really excited. I like a lot of his stuff. So I think it's going to be a really great female-dominated comedy, which I love.
I didn't look at this on IMDb, but I did before read a couple things about this that Peter Dinklage – might actually be playing the villain in this one.
I hadn't heard that.
Again, I try to stay away from spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, to my dismay, I sat in on you and Valerie talking all about Game of Thrones today, which it's okay. I have these characters you're talking about. I have no idea who they are, so I'm okay. And by the time I watch it, I may forget that. But if something does get spoiled for me, it's not the end of the world, because the excitement is in the experience for me. So
and you don't know how things play out necessarily, too. And that's something like we don't know who the bad guy is from these trailers.
Right.
We just see a lot of ghosts.
Somebody amplifying paranormal activity.
Yeah.
As
so
I believe
somebody.
Kristen Wiig is saying in that. Yeah.
Somebody could be anybody. So
could
we'll
be
find
anybody.
Out. Speaking of things we'll find out, that's coming up. Ghostbusters is coming up on July 15th. So that's a good midsummer one. And coming up on July 23rd or 22nd. Wow, I can't read. Star Trek Beyond, which is kind of flying under the radar.
It's not getting the talk that I imagined it would be getting. And I didn't even know about it until you brought it up to me, because I mean, I go on YouTube all the time, and usually I'm bombarded with things that are like, hey, you're going to love this. Watch this. And I haven't even seen it until – I hadn't seen it until last week or 2 weeks ago.
When we first were talking about, we should talk about summer movies.
Yes. Yeah, I think it was last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, what? How did I miss this?
No.
I like it. I think it looks good. I know you were kind of – on the fence about it? You think it might not be the best thing?
You know what? I really like Simon Pegg. And Simon Pegg is co-writing this. So he's co-writing this with Doug Young. Or Jung. I'm not sure how that's pronounced.
That's okay.
And you know, forgiven. He's a pretty good writer. I like a lot of his stuff. He of course, wrote Shaun of the Dead and some other great
films.
Hot Fuzz.
Oh, so good.
So he's definitely written some really fascinating stories. It's kind of going to be interesting to see what he does with Star Trek. And especially it's being directed by Justin Lin of the Fast and Furious fame.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people were maybe less excited about it after that last trailer came out.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of backlash on the it doesn't feel like a Star Trek movie. Obviously the first one was very different than the previous Star Trek movies, which this is now the third installment in this kind of reboot with the new cast with the original characters.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've still got Captain Kirk and Chris Pine is playing that role again. And he's, you know, kind of leading the band back together as they're going off world, it seems like.
I love Chris Pine as James T. Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you look at, like, original Star Trek episodes, look at William Shatner. He fits the bill pretty well, in my opinion.
He's got the swagger I think you need.
Yeah.
And that, like, generically handsome thing.
Yeah.
Which he is just so generically handsome in, like, a great way.
Yeah.
And there's something kind of subversive about him, too, which I like. You know, it's not just, like, vanilla white bread.
Right. Exactly.
And I think it's interesting, too. You got the Zoe Saldana as Uhura, and then Zachary Quinto as Spock. And it's kind of interesting to see that because they have a relationship in this universe, which is interesting to kind of have that as a different type of thing. And you think we're going to get a little bit more with Bones, with Dr. McCoy, Carl Urban. And it looks like Simon Pegg is going to be doing pretty prominent stuff as Scotty. He had a big action move in the trailer.
Yeah, I noticed that. It looked a little cheesy when he jumps on that cliff, but I mean, it's okay.
It's a trailer. There's always a lot of it. Like, especially they were doing it to the Sabotage, which is, you know.
I really liked them doing it to Sabotage. That was – I was pleased with that.
You were into it. You were super into that.
I'm a big Beastie Boys fan though, so.
Yeah. But it's kind of interesting. The Star Trek universe turns 50 this year, so this is like – the big blowout. So we'll see how they do it. Because, I mean, this could be maybe the last one they do with this cast. Or maybe they just go in a different direction. Maybe we're going to get Picard. Maybe we're going to get, like, a new actor in Picard.
Somebody ushed. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
I love Picard. That was my bread and butter growing up. So.
Yeah, that was me too. I was introduced to Picard as the, you know, Jean-Luc was my captain.
Jean-Luc was my captain, too.
I am just hitting the microphone left and right today, slamming into it. Like,
he's just so excited about Star Trek.
I have no respect for the equipment. All right. Anyway.
But we are getting, you know, Idris Elba back in there as the villain, which is going to be interesting. And we're getting this whole alien race that's very pale, and it looks like they have painted black makeup on them and then blonde hair.
There are a couple alien races we see in this one, and I was very pleased with that.
I do think it's going to be kind of interesting to see they're going off-world. They're going beyond, you know? Transporter fun. Looks like we're going to get a lot of, like, transporter moments.
Yeah, a lot of that. And I'm a little worried. I don't want it to be overused because it seems like it might be overused. It was already used twice in the trailer. I can't imagine that's the only time they're going to use it in the movie.
You never know, though. It could be because these are like – they try to make it super action-y in those trailers.
That's true.
So it is kind of – I mean, because even like the second film, which was the one where we had Benedict Cumberbatch, which was Star Trek Into Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
That one was a little slower, I thought. And the trailers for that, again, were really – intense, and there were a lot of action.
They were very intense. A lot of, like, crashing ships. And
there's not a lot of that.
No.
There's not a lot. There wasn't really a lot of that in this movie. So maybe this is a little bit of a misleading trailer as well. I think we're going to still get, like, a couple good trailers coming up soon, probably even in the next week or two.
Yeah.
That are going to give you maybe a better sense of what the movie's going to be like.
I think so, too. I'm hoping, anyway. So now that we've geeked out about that, let's talk about other geeky things. Like Loot Crate.
Oh, Loot Crate.
Loot Crate's not just for geeks, though, you know? You've got your gamer gear. You've got all this other stuff. And guess what? It comes right to your door.
Awesome.
You order it online and they ship it to you. It's like Christmas every month, but your grandmother isn't getting you underwear.
You don't have to return this stuff either. It's still pretty awesome.
Right. It's pretty awesome. You don't want to return it.
And it's exclusive.
It's exclusive. And if you go to lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter promo code Shaw, you get $3 off your new subscription.
Oh, it makes it even more affordable.
That's right. And there's a $45 value in every box, and boxes are under $20. So what are you waiting for? Get over to Loot Crate and do this now. You could get really cool exclusive stuff, like Nicole was saying, and it could be Star Trek themed.
Oh.
It could be Game of Thrones themed.
Yeah. They just had a Labyrinth themed one last month.
The Quest last month, Labyrinth, yes. So there you go, a little bit of David Bowie coming back in.
Ugh.
I know, right? Right?
I can't even.
I still get sad thinking about it.
I know.
But yeah, you get cool stuff. You get t-shirts, gadgets, collectibles. It's all there at Loot Crate. Mm-hmm. So make sure you hit up lootcrate.com/Shaw, enter promo code Shaw for $3 off your new subscription.
And that's S-H-A-W.
So speaking of more geeky stuff, we have a Game of Thrones with you and Val. Nicole.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the first episode of season 6, or as I flub it in a few seconds, something else.
Yeah, let's go to Nicole and Val talking about Game of Thrones.
Well, the Game of Thrones season 1, or season 6, episode 1 has started.
Yeah, aired last night, and Nicole Franz and I are here to give you our feedback.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the episode?
Well, Val, I kind of thought it was, you know, a slow build in a lot of ways, which they often do that. It's kind of like, you know, they have to bring it all back together. Although there was definitely some highlights where crazy stuff happened and you're like, oh my God, that wraps up that plot in a way I didn't expect quite so quickly.
Exactly. It was frustrating, but in the best way possible because it moved things forward so incrementally. It left me wanting more. I'm excited about this season. It went places I didn't expect it to go, mm-hmm. And some twists and turns. So it left everybody wondering, even book readers who, for the first time, asking what's next.
Let's start with some spoilers here. All the stuff in Dorne.
Dorne. Okay, jumping into Dorne.
That was the big thing for me.
Coming. Oh, okay.
I was like, oh my God. That was the thing I was like,
Yeah, Dorne was such a sleeper storyline last season that they just seemed to take that to a head right away and got rid of some of the principal characters there.
Yeah, they axed off some people pretty quick. You know how you had the Sand Snakes and Ilaria kind of taking over there. They took out the ruling guy who
Dorian,
was Doran Mattel.
Dorian, yep.
And then they also took out his son.
Mm-hmm.
Who I kind of speculated what's going to happen to him when he's with the, you know.
We talked about that last time. Yeah, who's the allegiance he was going to pick. And we don't have to worry about that anymore because the women are taking control and they're tired of do-nothing men. So it looks like they're going to head to war pretty soon. I don't see them wasting a lot of time to take control and rally the spears. So.
I'm curious how that's going to play out with the things going on in King's Landing with Cersei kind of like getting ready to roll. She's like so defeated in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
She's so sad about her daughter, you know.
And still reeling from her walk of shame last season. Mm-hmm. But now she's back together with Jaime and they're patching things up and he's just, heck with all that. Let's take them all on.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think they really realize what they're facing. They've got the Boltons in the north. They've mm-hmm. got Sunspear coming for them. They still have tensions with Highgarden.
Mm-hmm.
They've
got a lot of enemies.
They've got a lot of enemies. They're completely surrounded, and they don't even know about Dany and the White Walkers coming for them, and plus the High Sparrow going to war with him. So they're just – they seem pretty isolated right now for being so powerful once.
Yeah. I'm very curious how that's going to play out, but, you know, if we got another Lannister elsewhere, you've got Tyrion, who we didn't get as much, you know, Tyrion and Vannis. Varys, sorry,
yeah.
Moving around. Meereen.
They had a bit of a little comedy bit there that was kind of nice to see. It's nice early in the season they're able to let up a little bit and mm-hmm. let some levity into the season. They came upon Dany's burned ships in the harbor, and that was another frustrating thing because she's been walking around Essos for 5 seasons now, and those ships were what was going to take her to King's Landing. So I'm hoping Varys and Tyrion figure out a way to
Get
her back together, get her back on track.
Well, I mean, speaking of her, she's, you know, over there hanging out with the Dothraki. And that was kind of an interesting thing. They had that fun little bit where she's just sitting there and she knows Dothraki. Mm-hmm. She knows the language. But everyone else is like thinking she's just this like blonde lady who's like they keep calling her. What do they keep calling her? Like the pale. She's so pale. They keep making fun of how pale she is.
Uh-huh, and her hair, the white hair. And yeah, that was kind of a callback to when she was in Astapor and they didn't know that she spoke Valyrian. Mm-hmm. And then she's able to kind of pull it out that she's a badass no matter what. So that was good to see. But they're going to send her to the Dosh Kaleen with the other Khal widows. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure what's going to happen there for her. She's going to be rescued before she goes to the temple. Is she going to raise the other widows up and fight back? Yeah.
And her would-be rescuers, you got the little duo comedy to her, it seemed like, with, you know, you've got Dario and Jorah kind of heading out there, kind of figuring that out. Like,
I just can't imagine. Jorah just must be dying to kill him at every turn. Like the poor unrequited love there.
But don't you think so? In a little ways, he's kind of also, you know, he knows he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he knows he's got the grayscale, and that is pretty terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's kind of, like, wrapping up loose ends. He wants I kind of get the sense he wants her to be happy and safe. And
he's always had the mission to protect her, I mm-hmm. think. And now that's more than ever because his life is going to be ending soon. So he has a timeline mm-hmm. that he needs to make sure she's back on path before.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a lot of the arc of him and her this season is him finishing up and trying to get her to where she needs to be. So I'm hopeful that that's going to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Castle Black, I guess.
I guess we're back to Jon Snow. He's still dead. The other major piece to the puzzle that we have speculated about. Yeah. He's still dead. We're not convinced he's going to stay that way, but yep. Through episode one, he was cold.
Well, you got Davos kind of taking charge a little bit in a way, which is nice because that is a really interesting thing with him now that he doesn't have a king anymore. Mm-hmm. Who are his loyalties to now? And it seems like he's really found himself like he's like Jon Snow's a noble guy. He's trying. I'm going to try to do my part for that. And he's helping out the loyal Night Watch soldiers who are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they're going to go enlist the help of the wildlings.
It's a good idea. And I wish them luck. Davos is one of the few nice guys left in Westeros. So I always kind of root for him. Yeah. So hopefully they figure something out. They overthrow Alistair Thorne, who is just an ass. And I would be glad to see that happen, but yeah. Apparently that's going to be waiting down the road. The big action sequence we did get this time was Brienne of Tarth riding in to save Sansa, which was a huge cathartic moment. Yes. So,
yeah, it was so good to just have Sansa reunited with Brienne, she's finally being like, "Yep, I'm going to take your services. You've saved me enough times. I think we're going to officially make this official."
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Podrick again. I love me some Podrick. Podrick and Brienne, and now we got them and Theon and Sansa together. So it's like the four of them trying to take back the North, like single-handedly.
Yes,
we'll see if they get some help.
Things have been so dark for so long. It was nice to see a win, even one just as small as that. So hopefully they'll make their way to Castle Black and find some rescue there. So
not too many of the things we got wrong from the first episode, but we'll see moving forward.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll talk about it later this season if we want to check in.
Yeah,
at some
maybe
point.
We'll come back and see how the season's progressing, see if any of our other predictions panned out.
Yeah, more spoilers, I'm sure. All right, this has been Nicole Franz. You can find me at Franz or Foe on Twitter and Instagram.
And this is Valerie Katzenstein. I'm Valcats NWH on Twitter.
So that was your Game of Thrones talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's getting me really pumped. When I hear you guys talk about it, it's just getting me more and more pumped to want to go watch this, like mm-hmm. right now. But I got to get on Daredevil.
Oh, me too.
I got to finish Daredevil. I got to finish
Kimmy
Schmidt.
You got to start season two.
You got to start season two.
I know. Boyfriend, cramping my style.
Seriously, I got to catch up on Gotham.
Yep.
Are you caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. yet?
Yes.
Thank God. Okay.
It got real.
Was there one after that?
No.
There's not an episode after that. Okay,
I don't think so.
Okay, so I am caught up. Good. But let's talk about something that's pretty important today, still reeling from the news, mm-hmm. Prince passed away.
Yeah.
57 years old.
That's young.
That's really young. I can't believe we're losing these rock icons. Yeah. It's rock, pop icons. Just, we got to stop. I'm going to put a block on all pop and rock icons dying for the next month.
You just need to put Paul McCartney in like a bubble suit,
yeah.
right?
Elton John.
And Elton John. Suit. Oh my God, Elton John. We need to protect Elton John.
Protect Elton John. Protect his hands.
These tiny give him dancers.
Like, give him like those David Duchovny hands like in Zoolander. Evolution.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
When he's got the jars on his hands. We'll do that for Elton John. If anything happens to him, his hands are preserved.
Has anybody keeping an eye on Billy Joel?
Billy Joel is another one. Yeah. Get these hand jars. Get these hand jars.
Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen. I'm worried because that man just like runs around on stage all willy-nilly, no regard for his own safety.
Yep.
Slamming his crotch into cameras on the Super Bowl.
I forgot about that.
I mean... Come on. Mick Jagger, that's another guy. Like, I'm afraid he's going to break a hip on stage. Let's get these bubble suits around some of these people. But anyway, Prince, it was very sad news. I was very taken aback. I thought it was a joke.
You came over to my desk, and I thought you were, like, going to, like,
about to have an emotional breakdown.
You were
it
just,
was
like,
sad.
You were just so downtrod when you walked over it. Did you hear?
Yeah. I got back to my desk, and I couldn't do anything. I was like, I got 80 text messages from people. They're like, Prince died. Did you know Prince died? Did you know Prince died? And I'm like, well, no, I've been editing video and I haven't been paying attention to the news and I don't get updates back there because I get terrible reception in the back room. But it was very sad. I was very upset. And I wanted to talk a little bit about my first introduction to Prince. Mm-hmm. When I was a young child, my mother told me a story. She would go to an aerobics class and dance her blessed heart out to Party Like It's 1999.
Aww.
And she said when that song came on, she was just so happy and she would just work out to it and she was so excited. And then when I was about 5 or 6, she played that song for me and I was super into it.
Yeah.
And then she played for me a few other select tracks off the Purple Rain soundtrack because my mother did have the Purple Rain soundtrack on vinyl.
Nice.
And I was enthralled. The song itself, Purple Rain, was a great one.
Gosh. It's one of my favorites, if not my favorite.
Little Red Corvette, fantastic song. Let's Go Crazy. Like, all these tracks really resonated with me.
It's one of those things you almost forget. He had such a wide scope.
The man recorded everything.
Yeah.
He would put out double, triple discs, sometimes twice a year. Like, ridiculous amounts of music. I can't even imagine what his recording studio looks like. Like, how many unreleased tapes does he have in there? Yeah. You know, we could probably have a Prince album released every year from now until the day I die, and we still wouldn't hear all of his music.
Yeah.
That's how much. But I just wanted to pay a little bit of a tribute. He's a very prolific man. I wanted to pay a little bit of a tribute to the untimely passing of a pop icon. Thank you, Prince, for your years of servitude, and your music is just—it's been fantastic.
And for being you,
and for being you, and for being you is very important. But we'll do a little Purple Rain here before we go to a quick break. So
that Super Bowl performance, where I was watching that—they have it up on YouTube where you can watch him perform at the Super Bowl, and it's a little bit of a documentary style type thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely worth it. It's like 20 minutes, I think, and it's just absolutely worth every minute talking about that.
So good. So get a chance to check that out. Listen to Prince. Pay tribute today. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. This is Hub Arkish, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, and I'm here to let you know that Pro Football Weekly is back. To celebrate, we're giving away a collector's edition hoodie a day for the next 60 days. Just go to profootballweekly.com/hoodie, enter your email, and if you've won, we'll email you right back. While you're there, check out the site. You want an insider's guide to the NFL? Go to ProFootballWeekly.com for all the news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Pro Football Weekly, the best coverage in the NFL since 1967.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us again after that short break. Without further ado, here's Jamie interviewing Petar Kacenovich from Classical Blast.
We're here with Petar Kacenovich. He is coming to the Opera House on April 29th for a show, a very unique show called Bach to Rock. And hopefully he's going to tell us a little bit about that. But I kind of wanted to start with a little bit about your history. I was reading about you. You're growing up in Romania, and your parents wanted you to learn the cello. And I read something that you said, I want to learn to make the cello rock. So I kind of thought that was really cool. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Right. I started out with classical cello from pretty much fourth grade all the way through college. And I used to play for a lot of symphony orchestras, such as the Orlando Symphony, the Miami Symphony, and of course, my native Romanian Symphony Orchestra and the Opera House. But eventually I came to the conclusion that I really wanted to be a little more creative and not just sit there and play music that other, you know, necessarily others wrote, and there's all the creativity was, for me at least, taken out of it. So I wanted to get into the rock territory a little bit. Why should all the guitar players have all the fun, right?
Right. So I was reading how you heard some American rock, and that really kind of caught your ear. Are anything in particular that influenced you at that time?
I did listen to a lot of Metallica. Of course, there was the Nirvanas, you know, a lot of stuff. My genres were all over the place. I was still finding what fit me, of course.
And I love what you've done with this whole concept of Bach to rock. You're taking classical music and making it rock and appealing to so many different audiences, I imagine. Can you tell me a bit about what the show, what we can expect at the Woodstock Opera House?
Well, sure. There's a lot of classical music infused into the rock, obviously, hence the name. But we want to show people that these instruments, like the violin, which Jimmy Chaos plays, or the cello, you could do so much more with them and really fit them into any genre. So in this case, we combined it. We took Bach, since he's pretty much considered the father of classical music, and I have a huge appreciation for him. We took some of his themes and fused them with rock music.
That's awesome. And you have, when you say we, your band, Classical Blast, correct?
Right.
And you guys formed 2010?
That's correct.
Can you talk a bit about some of your band members? I know they have some pretty big ties.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we have David Cav on lead vocal and guitar. We have Jimmy Chaos on violin. Dave Kelly on drums. We have Bill Steiner on bass, whom also used to be the bassist for Survivor, the Eye of the Tiger band. And myself.
Awesome. And so
so there's five of us.
And you guys have performed with some pretty big bands, and I was reading Sting, Cheap Trick, other places you were playing.
I did that in Florida. I used to work for an agency that did a lot of these shows. And so I got to work with a lot of great artists.
And you recently released an album, Metamorphosis, Rock Versions of Classical Music. That's how the description reads. Can you talk a bit about that? I know there was something about a single that you mix Phil Collins in the air tonight with a classical piece by Handel, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The Sarabande. You know, we all like that song. Of course, so far, actually, I haven't met anyone that didn't.
Yeah.
In the air tonight. But it was surprising how well it fit with Handel's Sarabande, which has been written 300 years prior to it.
Yeah.
And we thought, why not? But what a good idea. Just mash it up.
Is anyone doing what you're doing? I mean, it's so unique.
Well, not that we know of. No, not that we know of.
And I know that you've performed at schools, obviously at concert halls, but also at schools. So I imagine you're drawing maybe a younger generation to not only listen to your music, but just to maybe open theirs a little bit to classical music that maybe they might not listen to. I mean, is that kind of one of your goals, is to kind of get people into classical music maybe in a different way or thinking about it differently?
Absolutely. We have met so many of these kids that, like you said, never been to a classical concert, and they've never really heard anything of it. But they all heard rock, right?
Right, right.
So this way we would expose them a little bit to the classical repertoire, and plus show them that it's really cool to play violin. It's really cool to play cello. You can do all these things mm-hmm. with that instrument.
I'm sure you're inspiring them.
Maybe it'll inspire something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely. And maybe making those that are involved in playing the cello and violin, making them feel a little bit cooler about what they're doing, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. At every show, we have sometimes parents or with the kids, you know, they come up and they say, oh, wow, we never thought that was possible, you know.
Yeah.
And so they go back to their instrument, and they start practicing again. They start learning. They get all enthusiastic once again about it.
And you were born to play, it sounds like. You were born into a very musical family. Was there ever any doubt what you would do?
Not really. Not really. We go on both sides. We have four generations of musicians, and all of them accomplished actually in their field. I have, you know, my mom. She's been a cellist in the symphony for 40 some years.
Wow.
My dad used to be a cellist as well. My grandparents are choir conductors. Another grandmother singer. You know, everybody did that, and who am I to break that chain?
Right, right. What do they think of your taking it and rocking with it?
Well, they weren't too happy when I quit the symphonic world.
Yeah.
But now they're proud.
Yeah, I imagine you've done pretty well with it. I imagine they're very proud.
They like the band a lot, and I'm really, really happy for that.
And was there ever a time when you said, I don't want to learn the cello?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Well, any kid wants to play. Who wants to sit there and practice all the time, right?
Right.
Somehow, they helped me stick with it.
And you play?
Yeah, there are rough times when you've had a little too much, and mm-hmm. Romania, since it's an ex, you know, communist country,
mm-hmm.
It was a very, very rigid and very, very stiff schedule of, you know, learning things. Besides the school, you know, we had to do the daily 3-4 hour practice. You know, you don't get to eat until you finish practicing and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
And you play other instruments, right? I mean, quite a few.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I play around with whatever noise box I can put my hands on. I play the guitar a little bit. I play piano.
Ever sing?
Well, I think I could, but I never really gave it a shot.
No.
There are others that do it better.
Okay.
Such as David Gaff.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Talk a bit about him now. Now, how did you two get together?
Well, through YouTube.
Oh, really?
I found one of his videos on YouTube about 4 years ago, and we needed a singer because our previous singer never did his homework and he had trouble learning the repertoire. So I was looking for a singer, and found his video up there,
like
emailed him, showed him to our manager Barbara Wigan, and shortly after that.
So what are some of today are? Do you have any favorite rock artists today, or?
I'm more into the older stuff, to be quite honest. Maybe it's the personality of those bands or the magic of that era.
Any songs that you want to kind of talk about on this new album you have out? I mean, we mentioned the Phil Collins song. Some others that you kind of wanted to point out, or any favorites?
Sure. We have we mashed Bach's Cello Suite Number 1 with Creep from Radiohead.
Awesome.
And that came out as a very, very interesting combination.
I imagine.
We made a video of it. It's up on YouTube. I don't know if you've seen it so far. That's one of the tunes that we will be playing at the show.
Do you do a lot of videos? Do you like that aspect?
We do like it. Of course, they get very expensive. So
yeah.
We try to do as many as we can.
And now, what else can we expect from you in the future? I mean, any other albums in the works or in your mind? Or
there are. We're doing a Christmas album that will be released this year in probably September or October. Not sure yet, but that'll be a very, very interesting album. It's a more somber, a little darker type of Christmas album.
Kind of the same concept of mixing some classical with some rock, or
for sure. But in this case, we're taking some Christmas songs and some of them that are not very well known.
Oh, okay.
We're gonna make rocky, symphonic-y. It's gonna be cool. It's gonna be really
cool.
I'm really excited about it. I want to mention actually. Our manager, Barbara Wigan, she really helped us put basically all our albums together.
Mm-hmm.
She helped put the video together, and I'm really thankful for her, actually. And we signed a record deal also last year.
Awesome.
With Took and Cove, which is a record company based out of Seattle. And they're placing us on the radio as we speak.
So, great. Where are you based out of now?
Chicago.
You're in Chicago. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, good. It was wonderful talking to you. I love the whole unique sound, the concept, everything. So I really appreciate your talking to us today.
Oh, sure. Nice to talk to you too.
Pack lies. And I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh, Lord. Well, I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. I remember, don't worry. How could I ever forget? It's the first time, the last time we ever met. But I know the reason why you keep the silence up. No, you don't fool me. Doesn't show, but the pain still grows. It's no stranger to you and me. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh Lord, I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. Oh Lord.
All right, and that was Jamie Kunzer giving her interview for Petar Kacenovich of Classical Blast. And we just heard In the Air Tonight, mashed with a piece from Handel, which is very cool stuff. And you can check those guys out again April 29th at the Woodstock Opera House. Don't miss it. It promises to be a great show. So, Nicole, I think that's probably
it. That's everything I've got.
That's everything you've got.
Yeah.
That's probably everything I've got. I want to thank everybody again, all of our guests. I want to thank Valerie Katzenstein and you, Nicole, for doing a Game of Thrones thing. I want to thank Petar Kacenovich for interviewing with Jamie. I want to thank Jamie for interviewing him. That was really awesome. Also, you can follow us on Blog Talk Radio or iTunes. And also, we're on Stitcher. You are right, though. I am just really riding the struggle bus. Like, I am at a loss today. I am messing with the controls. I am hitting the microphone.
It's okay. We'll get through this together. It's almost done.
It's almost done. We're almost over. So, all right. So anyway, yeah. Catch us. You can follow us on Twitter. I am on Twitter at Jason Frummer. That's P-F-R-O-M-M-E-R.
And I'm at Franz or Foe.
All right. Excellent. So to kind of close us off here, I just want everyone to remember when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one, Doctor, everything will be all right. Instead of asking him how much of your time is left, ask him how much of your mind, baby. Because in this life, things are much harder than the afterworld. In this life, you're on your own. And if the elevator tries to break down, go crazy. Punch a higher floor.